When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
And Michael Hamflett.
Oh my God, hi,
there
Scott.
He is. He's driving in, he's popping in. James Dowles, I don't know if we can legally say what he's doing right now. Sounds like he's on a special ops mission. So we don't know how long he's going to be out for, but it doesn't matter because we've got one of the best people alive, Mr. Michael Hamflett himself, over from What Culture Wrestling, which, quick plug, go check out What Culture Wrestling in YouTube form and article form because there's good stuff on there.
Unless you already check it out, in which case you'll absolutely be sick of your goddamn life. It's like, actually, 5 minutes away from those noise-making idiots on the wrestling channel.
Well, here's the thing, Michael Hamflett, right? Yeah. We have worked together for over 5 years now.
Yes.
And I would argue, you can argue against this, I'd say we're decent friends outside of this office.
It's been known. Occasionally hung out, although I never chose it.
Your will or not, we have hung out a lot, yet never ever done a piece of content together. We have been in content together, but never interacted. It's kind of like, and you know, part of my ego right now, De Niro and Pacino and Heat, this podcast now.
You can do the bit where it's like, but I'm both.
But yeah.
Both like De Niro and Pacino, but in one of these latter Netflix projects where they're both looking, and it's you, Hamflett, you're both guys.
Yeah,
both guys.
I'm De Niro and Pacino in Heat, you're De Niro in Dirty Grandad. That's what we're getting into right now.
We did one thing together ever, me and you.
Did we?
We ranked albums, and I forget even what year it was.
Oh, yeah.
For the then nation, What Culture Music.
Yes.
We did a halfie on the, like a collab on, like, was it maybe top 10 album, pop albums or something like that?
It was top 10 like, pop albums.
We were basically fighting for our favourite artists to get some coverage. It was a total abuse of the privilege we've got of being able to make content.
It was, we only managed to get to do that because it was like near Christmas and it was like, come on, let us have one. Yeah. Let us have
The initial plan for this was that we were going to get Hamflett on for the wind up on a Monday because that's more of a free form, not that this has much more structure anyway, but for the main podcast, that's usually sort of legacy topics and things where it's more controlled and we're going to go into things about gaming history and whatever else. But we always wanted to do something with Mr. Hamflett because we always talk at lunchtimes about everything, the philosophies of life, or gaming, or wrestling, or whatever. And thankfully, you had me on for the Rampage review the other week,
yes,
which went down very well. A lot of people getting in touch saying that they liked
it. Do well, if anything, Scott. I spent several days being really paranoid about losing my spot forever because you were so goddamn good in the spot.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, I think I'm surplus now.
We did very, very well. People liked our banter as a combined thing, so why not capitalize on that and bump up the date of which we do something combined again? Which is an excuse to just talk about being a gaming dad, being someone who likes the old games and likes being a dad. What's that like?
Because 50% of that is true.
I was just going to say, because the thing is, like, Scott and I aren't dads right now. The thing is, we get to play games.
I feel like that's the narrative of this podcast, by the way. This is lovely. I feel so protected by you both. Sat in the middle, encased in this cocoon.
He's ensconced.
of I don't know what I want to say about that, but I like that you view me as kind of like that figure, and not like an idiot child whose opinion you don't take that, seriously.
That's when
which
we
is
hang
good.
Out outside of work.
That's where that comes from.
But
yeah, I was just going to say, I'm interested in this genuinely because, you know, we get to play games all of the time. Too much, in fact. And I'm always...
You just said yesterday there's too many games.
100%. There's too many games and, you know, I'm putting too many hours into them. But I realise that, you know, a lot of our listeners and whatnot, you know, when they message us, they talk about, like, you know, being parents, having kids and having to work around, you know, having a life, essentially, looking after somebody, but still loving this hobby with a passion. So I'm actually, you know, just interested to see how you've kind of been brought back into the fold, as it were, maybe through your kids into the gaming world.
I'm definitely not. I'm a gaming dad rather than a dad that games, if that makes sense.
Like
the gaps in my social time are filled with wrestling. Obviously, as you say, there's too much of that. If it's the thing that you're focused on, and we work on it here as well. So gaming is very much something I do with them more than my own time now, with one exception, which I will get to, and I'm very excited to talk about it because I'll plug this game any opportunity I get. Yeah, I fell off when we had kids. That sounds awful, but like, it's just time disappeared. So
I think
certainly
it's correct time management.
Yeah, well, so like the games, I wasn't a hardcore gamer, but the things I would have loved putting time into, Red Dead Redemption, Grand Theft Auto, Rockstar adjacent projects that I would have normally enjoyed just going deep with. I just had none of that time for, because it's not, some people can do it, and I think that's really admirable that they do, but you either need to sort of wait till your kids have gone to bed, or your significant other's gone to bed, or you have that time or whatever. Making the time is difficult. And then being mentally and emotionally invested to get beyond 6%. I fired up GTA in the pandemic, and this is true. I went into the loft and I dug out all my old games so that I got my PS3 back out, because I just wanted to imagine what it was like to go for a drive. We couldn't go anywhere, so I was like, I'm going to get GTA back out and I'm going to go for a drive. But never in a million years would I have thought I fancy tackling the story. It was, I have half an hour, I'm going to go for a drive and cause some carnage, and that was it. Or I'm going to get on the horse on Red Dead and have a ride about a bit. With the kids, it's the Nintendo Switch has been, it was a lifeline in the pandemic. It was a purchase made, as I'm sure many people did, just for something. You're getting bored of staring at that screen. Do you want to stare at this one instead?
Right.
Like buying yourself some time, buying them something new. Like, my children are 9 and 7 now, so they would have been a little bit younger back then. But obviously Mario just presents this wholesome, like, veneer of different worlds they can dive into for a little while. And I'd been out of it for so long. I've come to both of you at various points with, like, little asking for a little bit of advice on which route to go down. And even from a point of view of, like, the online service,
Switch Online,
was easy for me to understand. It was a one-off payment. What I could do in there for them was great, but they couldn't really find harm, they couldn't find trouble, I wasn't going to get some horrendous bank statement where they've gone hog wild on a bunch of in-game purchases. It was easy to lock down. I needed it made as simple as possible for them to have a bit of, it's their first gaming independence. We've had a million dinner time like desk chats, and I say, well, what damage could I cause on my Sega Master System as a 7-year-old? Zero. That's very different now. I couldn't give them, I can, but it's got to be on airplane mode. I can't give them an iPad.
So
expect them not to get hooked and dragged into that. So the Switch felt like
that was one thing I was going to have down, because, like, Nintendo's like parent controls, that separate app thing that you can use and everything, is like one of the most robust, like, ones of them in the industry. And yeah, like that whole, like, thing that you hear about loads from parents of, like, I let my kid play something and then I got a bill for like £13,000 or whatever it was. Like, there was a case on the BBC a few years ago where some kid had been playing FIFA and just kept clicking the button over and over again. And I think it was a £3,000 bill that they'd racked up in like half an hour or something. How fast can you click a button? Like, and like, that's like a reality of modern gaming, is just microtransactions and how easy it is to just keep spending.
Yeah, horrific as well. It's a simple, well, right now it is, at least with the games the boys are playing. It is as simple as there being a password that would stop them getting past even the most basic of points. I've seen sometimes Charlie, my oldest, has got Down syndrome, so he plays, but then he doesn't necessarily spot an instruction. He just knows where to go for the games. So he'll sometimes get lost in the shop, or, you know, on the generic Switch opening screen where there's adverts on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
Might say if it was a Mario one, I'll have a look at that.
Yeah. Right.
He might think it's a trailer, he might think it's another game to play, and he'll go in, but even then, he can only get so far. And that's definitely an area where purchases could be made.
True.
If he was a little bit more wily, or either of them had access to our password for, like, the Nintendo login.
I guess it would still block it when you go to do the transaction, or it should.
That's it. It's a fairly easy wall in a way that Apple isn't so hot with, and other similar services are not so great with.
I tell you what, though, spending on the Switch store, I think the eShop, is like it's not a mess, but it's so ancient. Like, it feels like this weird thing. I don't know if you remember this, Hamlet, but when PlayStation 3 launched their first PlayStation Network store, and it was like this weird live browser thing, it wasn't like an actual executable.
Yes, I do remember that.
It was just so, like, what?
Do you want Internet Explorer, but worse?
Yeah, like, tiled interface. It just felt terrible, and the eShop feels like that. It always feels like you're loading a browser. I think you are. I think you're loading a browser thing inside the Switch, and it feels terrible. But I was going to say, in regards to finalizing stuff, if you tie your PayPal account to the eShop, when you go to check out something, if you just say pay by PayPal, it doesn't ask you to log in. It just does it. Like, yeah. I just do that for ease of buying stuff. But I'm like, anyone could just get my Switch and buy stuff.
Not a gaming storefront, but I remember the first time I did like the one click purchase on Amazon, and you didn't have to confirm it. And it was just like, yep, that's coming to your house tomorrow. Yeah. I thought, that's dangerous. That is, I'm pleased I didn't have this when I was a kid.
It is. We should pivot into just general sort of earliest gaming memories. I thought we could share some of them. Like, because I think, Hamlet, you were a Nintendo kid back in today?
Well. Game Boy.
Oh!
Game Boy, yes. Console, Sega.
Right, cool. So, Sega, oh, I always like that, yeah.
Sega Master System, Sega Mega Drive, Game Boy.
Yep.
And then on to PlayStation. So,
did you have the Master System version of Sonic? And he looked really weird.
I had the Master System version and couldn't work out, as you don't when you're kids. It takes a while to put things together, doesn't it? Why mine was so much lamer than the one that I played around my mate's house. Yep. It was because my mum and dad had got me a Master System instead.
And
as a parent now, I completely understand that. I will also try and fob my kids off with a cheaper alternative of the good thing as often as I can.
The Aldi brand version of Sonic.
This is it. And you buy that time. Mm-hmm. And I think about it now of how much slower it played, because I've played every ported Mega Drive version, whether it be on the PS3 Sega Collection or now on the Switch or through Sonic Mania or whatever. It crawls. Like, Sonic on the Master System absolutely crawls. I think even the Game Gear version was quicker. playing that on the Master System and then finally getting there. I wish I had the discipline that my folks had. This reference will date me, but just imagine that imagine eBay, but you just had to put a card in the supermarket. Basically, right. Supermarkets had this thing where you would have the card in the corner, like, and you could buy and sell things.
Aye.
And you would pay like £5 and you could put a card in the supermarket for a week. And obviously loads of people going shopping. So what my folks would do, it's a good discipline tactic, but I just don't have the stones as a parent to do this. So around October time, I would have to say goodbye to my console. And it would go in the Morrison's thing and it would be like, console for sale, 50, 60 quid or whatever. And then they would use the money to buy that year's Christmas present. So if I wanted to upgrade, I had to go, whatever it was, 2-3 months, game free.
Ooh,
so the Master System disappeared for the Game Boy. I think the Game Boy disappeared for the Mega Drive. And on that went, I think up until the PS2.
Right.
Like, that was we got flooded out of our house that year, and I think it was a guilt purchase. life's gone sad for a while, but it was like GTA 3 and Scary Movie on DVD.
That'll make you feel better. Player,
and I was like underage of the Scary Movie like rating. I was like, this has gone great. Let's have more floods.
That whole like rotational thing, I used to do that like when I was a kid, and for the most part, until a lot of the physical stuff went away, like physical stores, because you could get a game, keep the receipt, take it back a week later. It's within the like 7 to 10 day period thing, and exchange it for its full value and then get something else and then do that again and then eventually settle on the third game. I think I mentioned this on an old podcast, but I would like look at the game I want to keep, but I want to try these other two and then do them on the way to the game I want to keep.
Yeah.
And then also, in terms of trading consoles in or whatever, their values were just way higher, like in-store credit. I mean, CX is pretty good in the UK for being able to still do that now. But yeah, like if you can get in a routine with that, like I guess the only thing that's changed over the years is that you can do that quite immediately now. You don't have to wait for months or whatever.
Definitely something that I've noticed already with my kids. They've had the Switch about 2 years. And we don't buy the game, we buy the cartridges typically because there's a bit more ceremony around it at the age of that.
Yeah,
they're like having the thing and, you know, swapping the games out and stuff. The dedication I would put into games then versus what they do now, if it just doesn't interest them, it'll be months before they go back to it. I would have one or two games at a time.
Yeah.
And it was certainly, I don't know, it was just, that's it. That's what I played. That's all I played. Played. Mm-hmm. And then, so Sonic on the Master System being a great example.
I love you bringing up Sonic. I was like, are we going to talk about Sonic this week? We're going to talk about Sonic this week.
An absolute knacker to complete.
A Sonic fan.
But it was the only thing you would do. So of course you'd master the first 3 or 4 levels. Of course you could like get up to the first zone of Labyrinth before you would like lose your mind and get frustrated with the second one. Like, because you would play that every time. It would always be by the time you get into level 4 or 5 that it was getting late, or you had to switch it off and
start all over again.
Like, that's it. Every time was just starting all over again.
Oh my God, password saves. Like, obviously the Mega Drive didn't have them, but the PS1 did on Crash. Yeah. Where it was just like, make sure you memorize this 16-digit thing so you can get back here again.
So with your kids, was it a situation where they were interested in games beforehand but didn't have a console? Or was it a situation where you were like, hey kids, look at this thing you've never experienced before, and then they gravitated towards it? Because I can't remember never knowing about games consoles because I was introduced to them so young.
One of my friends had a Mega Drive / Genesis for the Americans, and I went over there, played Sonic, and I was like, oh my God, this is life-changing.
Yeah.
And then begged my parents for the console, but we got the Master System not knowing there was any difference because we could just afford it, and it said Sega on it.
Yeah.
And then getting home, and then I played like the Master System version of Shinobi and Sonic, and they just looked worse. Mm-hmm. But I didn't understand what was different, and then it was like, oh, they're actually different consoles, and it's like a half-step thing and whatever.
16-bit was a real like kicking the nuts, isn't it?
In the neds.
No, because I had that same experience as well. You play around somebody else's house, and then all of a sudden your parents' lives are ruined because, well, that's what I want for Christmas. Nah. And that's it. Now that's it. Like, you're going to be skinned forever. Very much the other way. Again, a lockdown thing was the kids really getting into watching Mario videos on YouTube Kids.
Right.
Just constant.
Like gameplay stuff.
No. So streamers, Stampy. Guy, nope. There's a streamer called Stampy. There's a lot of terrible ones, but he's a pretty good one. So any parent who's listening, like, there's worse than him. Mm-hmm. And he would play Mario Kart.
Which
now I realise is Mario Kart Deluxe. But I was watching this thing that had a lot of Mario Kart levels from the Wii that I'd remembered, yep, and from like my mate SNES that I remembered and stuff, obviously, because all of it's there combined in it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And they were watching these and Mario Party videos. So it would be a streamer just playing game after game, like a video that lasts an hour on YouTube Kids, but of all these Mario Party mini games, one after another. The kids are just absolutely captivated by them.
That's and fascinating, again, that.
I don't mind being honest about it. It was too much screen time, but it was lockdown and it was just, let's see if I can buy an hour here. And they were just mesmerized by it. And kids' attention spans are less than ever now because there's always different things to be distracted by. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, they were absolutely glued to it. And it wasn't even Christmas. We made the call. So it was January 2021, I think we got it.
Remember you asking us too about you were going to get a Switch?
We'd got through Christmas and thought, do you know what? That probably should have been the big present. And then we found some deals after Christmas and we just thought, let's just take the leap. There's another lockdown happening in January 2021, and then they had it. So it was, they were I think they saw it and were both captivated by what it was.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably Josh, my youngest, asking, how do we play that? Yeah. And when you're a kid, you don't even know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So it's just, they probably at first thought Mario was a cartoon. And then when they realized somebody else was playing it and could control it, or maybe me and my wife would have talked about, we played Mario when we were a kid. You played it.
Yeah.
Go on. And now and Mario's in the toy shop, and Mario's this thing that can be merchandised in a way that certainly wasn't the case when we were kids.
No, not as much anyway.
To the toy shop and buy a Sonic toy. It was a game. Yeah. It was just on the screen. Mm-hmm. Because there was a world that they could easily dive into. The fact that it was suddenly in their hands, that was the magic of being able to put, like, you, Josh, gave me Mario Odyssey.
Yes.
And I played it the day before we set it up for the kids. And I was thinking, this isn't Mario, is it? It's 3D. You don't really die. You sort of just keep on, you lose 5 coins and you keep on living. Uh-huh. And then me and my youngest played it together. Mm. I was Cappy, he was Mario. A phenomenal bonding experience when we were looking for them.
Yeah.
And he just absolutely loved it. My oldest has recently deleted the save file with the completed game on, and I need to hide that for as long as possible, or just take Mario Odyssey to CEX and pretend that we lost the game.
Pay for Switch Online? Sorry, just super quickly. Do you pay for the Switch Online yearly thing?
Yes.
You might have a cloud backup of that.
Ooh, that's interesting. I got it for the Mario Kart added tracks.
Right, cool.
Fastest one.
You might have a cloud backup because it doesn't sync the delete. As far as I know, it shouldn't have then deleted the cloud save.
Yeah.
So you might have a cloud backup if you pay for it.
You could have saved my life there.
Maybe, I'm just crossing all the fingers. Podcast.
You're going to have to take on a second job. Like, when they go to bed at night, you're going to have to be playing that game to get to where you were before. Because,
by the way, top 5 games I've ever played, ever. I'm obviously biased to wrestling games in particular, but easily one of the best games I've ever played. I've got loads of sentimental value now because of playing it through with Josh, my son. Not you. But I understand.
You were the son.
But so well made, just beautiful. You know what it did? It did something that even GTA never did, which was you play that game, GTA, and something happens and you wish you could interact with it. Mm. I can never remember not once thinking, I wish I could interact with that, and then you're high cappy and you can.
Right.
It's just so, it feels, it's open world in a way that doesn't feel too big.
Yeah.
And too intimidating.
I feel like a lot of people, like, for the Switch, just in general, came back to Nintendo. Like, there was the whole Wii era, which was, like, solid enough. It was fine. Everyone played Wii Sports and everything. But, like, that console was
dominated. I was a gimmick Wii guy. Definitely had it for 6 months.
Like, my parents got it.
Got a Wii, some Mario Kart, had Wii Fit. And it just got the dust and went away.
That was the thing. Like, but then a lot of people came back, and I feel like a lot of people remembered how much they loved Nintendo, or were able to go, oh, my God, this level of game is, like, just so immediate and polished.
If you permit me to just go back one second, I'm just so fascinated by what you said there about your kids, you know, like, watching other people play video games on YouTube and then getting interested in them that way. Because when I was young, which is my only frame of reference for people being young, and I forget that people don't share that experience, like, gaming media outside of the games themselves was, like, so rare. Like, you know, this was, like,
pre-YouTube
magazines, but you can't get what Hamflet was describing there, I would argue, of the sensation of knowing what it looks like in motion. You get screenshots and you'd be allured by those screenshots and the look and the colors and, oh my God, what is that monster, Crash Bandicoot? What even is that animal? But you don't see it in motion. And I imagine if I was a kid, seeing it in motion, in being having a gaming world available at my fingertips outside of the console or outside of a PC, like, that's just so different and so much more of an allure than I think seeing print magazine back in the day.
So I thought that for the longest time, I thought that because of the exposure that you get to games through YouTube, the ability to, I remember when YouTube first came along, one of the first things I did was look for a video of somebody completing, I think it was Sonic 3 or something, one I never completed when I was a kid, because I wanted to watch the end sequence of Sonic 3, and I realized, oh my God, the power of YouTube, I can see the end of Sonic 3 now, right? And then when the kids started finding games through this, I was a bit put off by it, because I thought, well, I've seen everything. Patrick Stewart and extras, you've seen everything. You know, it's just like, there's nothing to play, is there? And then where my head was turned was, we were working through Mario Odyssey, and you complete the game in story mode, and then it was trying to collect as many moons as possible to fill the Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I think it was 300 or something, whatever it is. You got to fill the Odyssey, and obviously the more coins he was getting, the more outfits he could buy in the game and all that. And some of the moons were really, really tough to find. But you Google something Kingdom Moon 31, and somebody's uploaded that specific way to find that moon. I was like, oh, actually, this is best of both worlds stuff, this, because watching it on the screen and then us replicating it, the buzz wasn't any less.
Right.
Because we'd still done it ourselves.
You still got to achieve it.
Yeah,
like, do the timing,
we still
and
did it. It's just, we really needed a game to show us how to do it. And it reminded me of those dreadful, awful $15.99 walkthrough manuals that you would buy
so
for
many
from HMV and Game. Yeah. What a...
The ones you got with gaming mags, where they were just like little, it was like all the cheats from this month's games. It was like little printed, little tiny little books. I have a million of them in my old house.
You would see clips on Games Master where somebody had used a Game Genie. I was like, what?
Or an exploder.
So you've hacked it then. That's what you've done. You've not done it properly. You've hacked it.
That still happens on YouTube, where it's just like, oh, the solution to this thing, and they've just modded it. And it's just like, that doesn't tell me anything. I can't access this thing.
Your mate that got a better Mega Drive controller with a turbo button. So when you press a Street Fighter, they just held it down and he on went. Oh, this is really fun.
That's how I got
another perfect. Well done, you.
Well done.
Yeah. Josh, what is your earliest gaming memory?
Oh, it was, I think I've talked about it before, but Hamflet may not know this because I don't think you would have watched the chatty faces in which I talked about this almost.
You underestimate me. I'm like a proud father. I watch all the content. I watch all of the content, full stop. I'm not producing it. What should we just watch it?
We just content do. King. That is our entire life.
Sleep it.
My first memory was when I was 4 years old, which seems like a fake thing to even talk about. Like, how can you remember?
I got into wrestling when I was five.
When you were four,
I only know it because of the date of the show. But it doesn't seem. I've had 5 year olds now, and it doesn't seem right that something when they were that little could be implanted.
That's it. But this made a significant impact on me because it was. I must have seen a PlayStation before. PlayStation 1 was my first console, and I must have seen someone play it before because my cousin had one at the time, and I wanted one for Christmas. I was like, what is that? I need to get this, and my dad got me a PlayStation 1 for Christmas, but in a cheeky little misdirect, he allowed me to play it the night before by telling me that it was my cousin's. So I was playing the PS1 game Hercules on Christmas Eve,
good game,
and my dad was saying, look, you've only got 5 more minutes because you need to go back to your cousin. He's needing it for Christmas Day. Let's just hope that Santa Claus brings you one tomorrow. In the cheeky bastard, the next day, I woke up and he did the classic parent thing of knowing you really want a gift and hiding it. So I opened my presents, you know, oh, no PlayStation, a little bit
sad. Thanks for the socks, Dad.
Yeah, Dad's like, you know, oh, so did you get everything you want, Josh? And I'm like, well, I got a lot of nice stuff, got a nice Batman Forever Batmobile, but, you know, didn't get the PlayStation
1. I imagine you, when you're tiny, it's just your exact head right now, but on a tiny little body, just going like, wait, sorry.
My Val Kilmer doll's got nips, just like the film. So I'm happy, I guess.
But I'd love to play this on a PlayStation. And then it was the classic thing of, oh, there might be one more gift behind the tree that you didn't realise. Yeah. And then it was the PlayStation. It was Hercules and PlayStation 1. And maybe Batman Forever as well, to be honest, because I was a big Batman Forever and a Batman Robin fan at the time. So yeah, that was my first memory. But like I was saying, you know, like that is probably the earliest memory I have playing that Hercules game. So I literally can't remember a life having not known what a games console is or what video games are as a thing.
I feel like the amount of time that's passed between, but that's the whole thing. Like Christmas console energy is the best energy. Yeah. Like even, because even when I got my N64, I say it's Christmas, but I got my N64 for my birthday for my 30th. I just didn't have an N64 when I was younger. And even that was incredible. And like even just being able to do like some sort of celebratory thing with a console, it just feels good. You get to access it and interact with it and whatever else. And I guess that's what makes that, like that's just a timeless feel, like booting something up, interacting with something. Those kind of things have never gone away. I was going to ask you, because we're going to do a little news portion after this, but do you feel like, what else do you feel has changed? Like there's like the whole way that games are advertised and like how sort of simplistic you can jump into stuff you want about the damage you couldn't do back in the day in regards to microtransactions and whatever. Is there like a general thing that comes to mind if you were like, what's changed?
Microtransactions are a living nightmare.
Right.
As a parent, like that's not, I don't mean to sound hyperbolic there.
No, we've said forward.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It is a living nightmare. I hope the kids aren't listening to this, but Santa might be trying to figure out an iPad. Jesus Christ. And that's going to create like a world of its own. And obviously, at the moment, it's predominantly for games as well. It's just a thing for them to do their games on. And like, we can fool them into doing the homework because that's been gamified, you know, through the school, no less. Like, they've got a really cool app that basically has them playing games.
That's cool.
Secretly is helping them spell and do the time tables at the same time. So that's really good.
You know, just a super little random thing. I'm doing Duolingo. No, we're not sponsored at all by Duolingo, but I'm learning Japanese through Duolingo, and that's so gamified. It's so like lots of pop-ups, and oh my God, you just got 50 gems for doing this.
Everything is, isn't it?
Everything is, but it's effective. I like that. And then they've just launched like Duolingo Maths or something. Yeah. And I was like, if they had this when I was younger, like if they had this Duolingo thing for languages, I would have totally learned all the languages back in the day. So it can be effective, even if, like you said, there's an element of manipulation to it.
I don't know if... So ultimately, running apps, for example, is one that I would use all the time. And that's, you're looking at little graphs and you're seeing if you're beating your personal best. Mm. I'm not so sure if it's a bad thing. It's just such a user-based situation. It's such a situational thing, isn't it? It's a problem if you become so addicted to the graphs and the gamification of your life, I guess. Like, you can scan what you eat. And I remember... You probably watched this at the time, and I remember it being controversial. I watched it because of the host. You might have watched it because of the subject matter. Mm. Do you remember Charlie Brooker doing the top 100 games, and he put Twitter at number one?
I hated that he put that at number one.
A lot of people did, right?
It's
aged incredibly well because Twitter was so new, and people were kind of fooled into thinking it of nothing more than a social media site. And in reality, and you know, we're all guilty of it. It becomes a numbers game instead, and it becomes this chase for nothing. That's the worst thing, is that there's never a prize at the end of it.
I never realized
Sonic bonus level, where if you get all the rings, you do get a gem at the end. Mm. You're just running and trying to dodge the bombs. Like, that's all it is. And sometimes you're upside down, and sometimes you're right way up.
But that's just life, isn't it?
In Twitter, like the
I never realized with Twitter until I think you told me, Josh. You can click when you go on your tweets. You can go on a thing that shows you like the insights of like how many people saw it, how many people actually liked it, impressions or whatever. And I was like, I never even knew all that data was there. And then I think you said like, I just can't look at that stuff because it just dominates everything.
That was the moment where I put a lock on my phone to only be able to interact with it for 10 minutes a day, because once I understood that there was a screen that gave you all the stats and you could see impressions, you could see profile clicks, you could see how many followers you got that month.
Gross.
I was like, I do not need to see that.
There is, and this does tie back to gaming, and I'm sorry for like losing this, I'm just so excited.
Doesn't matter at all.
There was a that documentary that they did the rounds on Netflix about The Social Dilemma, was it?
Yes.
It was a bit silly, but there was a lot of really good points in there. I think it's worth going and watching it, and I definitely apply this to games now.
Is that the one with the ex-Twitter devs talking about the monster they've made? Yeah. They can't do anything about it.
So, and there was a good thread about this recently, of course, on Twitter, so you're having to engage with the monster to learn about what makes the monster tick, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But again, I think this can be applied to gaming, because I think it must be. There was a thing where, so I'm sat in front of a mixing desk as we record this, and there was a thing where they said, Twitter is often like somebody sat in front of a mixing desk, where they'll notice, they'll be able to monitor engagement to such a degree where if they don't think enough users are experiencing the high of, say, a tweet going viral, for example, or somebody, a Twitter user just doesn't really engage, that by clicking a finger on a mic, they can just up a dial or up a knob on a mixing desk, and that tweet, you've fired out 100 million takes on Twitter and nobody's ever engaged with anything, and then you your 100 million of them first take suddenly gets 8,000 retweets,
right?
And a million likes or whatever. And you just, this is amazing. It is a hit. It has effect. It changes the way the brain thinks.
Yeah.
So that's you.
It's like a dopamine rush.
Yeah. That's you back onto it, chasing the dopamine for years and years and years. And that will glue you to that app because you'll remember what that high felt like.
Yeah.
You remember what it was like. And then your next 6 to 10 tweets do nothing. And then you're down in the dumps because you thought, hang on, I thought I'd completed this game. And I thought, now I'm going to be celebrated and like shared across communities because my tweet about this thing was incredible. It's all fake. It's people just twiddling knobs, right? The idea that occurs with games that my kids play is quite stressful, because a cartridge or a CD was once just that.
Yeah,
and it was nothing more.
Not a live service.
It was, and it reminds me of all the discussions about how Bill Gates sold products to market. Apple kind of want to sell themselves to you as a lifestyle choice forever.
Yeah.
It's never over. Whereas like you would buy a PC with, I'm not doing like old man yells at cloud as such, but the technology was once a thing that they sold. Like once you bought Windows, you bought it and that was it. You had Windows, you had your PC and that was that. Same with games.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry about the idea of say online gaming as my kids get a little bit older, playing it and getting that validation, but then the game, people behind the game deciding how much validation they should have and that much control that they will wield over my kids' heads.
Super quickly, there was that thing about, I don't know if your kids have experienced it or whatever, but it was like various children were being bullied because they were being called default because their parents or whatever wouldn't fork out for the deluxe skins.
Oh,
Fortnite.
I can imagine, yeah.
There was like a whole thing and I was like, oh my God, that's such a, because I was bullied a hell of a lot in school. It's like, that's such a twisted reason to bully someone.
My kid asked why his Fall Guy gimmick.
Yeah.
It's just the generic one.
Right.
It was, where do they get all them colours from? And the truth was, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I think the more he's played it, the more you can get stuff within the
game. Yeah, you can unlock
a funny hat or something now. Mm-hmm. But when I first looked at it and I saw all these different things, I was like, all I can see is pound signs.
Well, because the default assumption is
it's money. That's going to cost me a quid, that's going to cost me a quid, that's going to cost me a quid, and I don't really want to open the door in the first place, so ultimately he's stuck with the generic one.
I think that's the real poison, though, is the assumption of paying more. Yeah. Like, this whole thing, one of my friends was like, oh yeah, like, they died in Dark Souls, and it's like, well, how much money do I spend? How do I pay to come back again? And it was just like, you don't, you just play the game, and it'll happen.
And you were talking about, like, the systems there that, you know, will, you know, arbitrarily or not push you into certain, you know, scenarios with those games, certain algorithms that are, you know, kind of setting up what you see within those titles, like with Scott, what Scott was talking about there with like the default skins, and what you were talking about there with the default Fall Guy skins, like there were patents signed, you know, years ago about the idea of online matchmaking pushing people who haven't paid for skins into lobbies, into matches with people who have paid for skins, so they can essentially
manufacture FOMO
FOMO, get your eyeballs on these skins, and these players who have the skins are doing well, then you want the skins, and it's like, it's all engineered ultimately, not for you to have fun, but for you to see a thing that they want you to buy.
Mm-hmm. It's an active algorithm instead of this experience that is just in one solid state. Mm. As I say, like, ultimately, obviously, games themselves are made to create something challenging or make you think you've got it right and then get it just wrong. And obviously sometimes, again, I was Mario and Sonic World and reference points, but if you don't jump at that exact point, that's it, you're dead. You've got to master that. But at least it's a thing you can master, and it will happen with practice. And there was it's earnest achievement rather than this sort of stuff that we're all talking about. And like, I didn't know any of that, but this speculative, it was just like, you can see it from an outsider if you're a digital native, as we all are, that kids especially cannot, and young people that aren't educated by digital native parents cannot. And it just, and the bullying, the idea of it being a bullying thing.
The amount of what Josh was going to mention, the pattern stuff, like the amount of like manipulative frameworks that are at hand in any online live service game that goes on long enough, or it depends who it's coming from. If it's coming from an EA or Warner Brothers and Ubisoft, whatever, like they have all those things in place. That pattern was an EA one, I think.
And Activision, I think, as well.
Activision, because it was like a Call of Duty thing, and it's like, yeah, that idea of just how do we make you think it a certain way to make you spend more money. And then the fact that you went there when I said what else has changed, and you said they're a living hell, it's like we've communicated that for years. Like,
I feel like if you hypothetically met a game designer in a bar and he'd had too much to drink, he'd speak to you like he'd been through the Vietnam War or something.
I've seen some things, I've done some stuff.
Well, not to be an old man, right? An increasingly old man across the board on this table right now. But I think the issue is as well, like, we remember that when the stuff that they're selling now, like skins, like costumes, like cheat codes in some cases, like they were just standard, they were free, but it's become so normalized for, you know, even teenagers now who, you know, can't remember getting one of those cheat code booklets or anything, that this is just something you pay for. And if you're not kind of into games, as many parents are, you would just assume that was the norm. Like, people like us who remember that this stuff used to be free and are incensed about the fact that they're now behind paywalls, like, that's eventually going to die out. And I think like the long game for these companies is to just kind of brute force it now, take the backlash, because that backlash will get less and less as the years go on, and we kind of age out of games, people become parents, they get a lose touch or whatever, and then new generations come in who just say, well, this is just what video games are.
They just assume it. That's what I mean about like the real like corporate poison that'll linger, is the idea that it's always there, that you can always just pay for something. I do think the indie scene is booming, like far more than it ever was before, and that's the real, like, if there was like a chorus of angels in the distance, it's the indie scene. Like, that's the thing that is just like, go over there, that's the market that you grew up with, that's the variety of gameplay mechanics and experiences that you want, it's over there. But a lot of the AAA stuff, just because the production amounts are so high, the costs are so high, they lean on the microtransactions, but that ends up becoming greedy. Like, there's so many more greedy implementations of microtransactions rather than things that feel like we're just paying the devs because it's a live service for the next year or whatever. I feel like it goes into the greed territory far more often. We should do a little news segment, because I thought we'd do a little bit of our man on the street, our ham on the street, you might say, and that's various things. And because it was announced yesterday that EA, well, we knew this was coming, this is a leaked thing, and maybe this is the first time EA have confirmed it officially, and that EA have partnered with Marvel for three big AAA games, the first of which then was followed up on by Jeff Grubbe, known Insider, saying the first game will be Iron Man, and then we know after that there's a Black Panther game coming and one more. We just thought we'd talk about that general idea of, you know, where Marvel is at. How much is Marvel a thing in your house? How much is the MCU a thing? And can the likes of EA bank on this going forward?
Because the story is done. Like, video games.
What's the opposite of gotcha journalism? Because I feel like I cannot believe I've been given this platform to be the worst guy on the internet about Marvel stuff. How long you got, boys? Because like, we've got a wrestling podcast later on, but I guess we're going to cancel that recording because Hamlet started talking about Marvel.
When we go off mic, you can thank me for this one. Because I'm interested, right? Because games for me, you know, outside of movies and outside of TV right now, is like one of the last visual mediums where original IP has been king. You know, we would get loads of sequels, of course, but they're very rarely adaptations. They're very rarely, you know, movie tie-ins. But now, with deals like this, with deals with Disney,
Indiana Jones,
with Lucasfilm, Indiana Jones, you know, we're getting so many movie IPs bleeding into video games that I worry that we will lose the original ideas, we will lose the original IP that still makes gaming so great despite the incredible greed that we were just talking about.
Well, so I guess my take on this is that as gamers, you don't need to worry. I honestly think this is not a gaming thing. This is, and I apologize, to anyone that feels like I'm like attacking something precious here. Like, the things you love are trash, and like the industry has just gobbled up your love and your affection for the things you like, and like even more so than the games that we were just talking about, has monetized it to the extreme. So when I was a kid, so I was born in 1985, so it wasn't like games were brand new, but certainly games in the home were still a relatively new thing. So and like I grew up near Scarborough, so there was lots of arcades I could access. Loads of arcade machines were more about licensed things, so it'd be like playing the Simpsons game or the Turtles game. No one with the flames coming up off the floor, like iconic Turtles arcade game. And there was, so Rocky was a game I had for the Master System. It was just a terrible boxing game, but it was called Rocky, right? And the whole thing is you've got to beat all Rocky's baddies in the game. So for one thing, I think it's just always existed. But I think, anecdotally, that when a film game is terrible, it just goes away. How was the adaptation of this film? It wasn't very good. So you just didn't play it, right? So like
that happened with the Guardians of the Galaxy game.
You just mentioned Hercules, and both me and Scott went, oh, like that. And I also remember Aladdin being like really playable.
Yeah.
A couple of other ones. And I had a Donald Duck one for the Master System that was tremendous as well.
Oh my God, DuckTales.
I was never a bigger fan of the Mickey Mouse one, the castle. But the Donald Duck one was great. But they were ultimately, they were judged completely on how playable the games were. But they were still going to get made because a film, and this goes back to the things you love, Marvel fans, I'm sorry it's trash, but loads of it is. A decision is made really early on whether or not we can turn $100 million into $200 million. Mm-hmm. And those figures are probably, I'm probably out of date naming those figures. We're probably sticking a zero on both of those now. That's where it starts and that's where it ends. And the $200 million is not just what's at the box office. It's not just how much they sell them to Netflix or like if DVDs are even still a thing, but it's how much you merchandise them. And I know this because I'm stuck in toy shop aisles all the time having to stare at them. But like games are the same. Like that game, what was the one I was just thinking of before? There will be out there, and you will probably know it and have played it, it'll got 0 out of 10. There'll be a Catwoman game from the Halle Berry Catwoman.
It was one of the worst games of all time.
Well, because it was one of the worst films of all time, right, wasn't it? But it was like, well, we've got in the budget for this terrible Catwoman film, there'll be a terrible Catwoman game and some terrible Catwoman action figures. But what if the film blows up? And the game will do better. Everything will do better by orders of magnitude based on their in. We've laughed about this, Josh, just by laughing at the screenshots of the Sopranos game, for Christ's sake. Like, the Sopranos becomes such a marketable thing that they're like, can we try a game? We'll try a game.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Lost the game will capture people's attention.
Hey, Lost Via Domus is a great game.
Right, so like I remember the Lost game, and I, what the hell is this crap?
Yeah.
Like, do you know the one for me? They marketed this, and I was sucked in. Like, hook, line, and sinker. We've definitely discussed this about, like, this is going to be awesome at family Christmas, and it was crap because it had no stakes. Was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I bought that as well.
Right, yeah. Oh, my God. Like, the television experience in my own home, mom's going to love it, dad's going to love it. Like, it's perfect for all the family.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, should I just guess because it's not real money? Yeah, I think I will. Like, you strip the actual cash stake. Like, if I get this right, I'm not getting £1 million posted through the console. So it does not matter. Me, lost. I'll just play again. And then you played again once more, and it was like,
It just took forever to try again.
Doesn't matter how good the Chris Tarrant animation was. I'm just not playing anymore.
I love that, man.
And I honestly think some film games will be good, some film games will be bad. That'll be either subjective or because you're a fan of the franchise, but it's already decided for you because they do not give a shit about you at the end of the day. I know, like, being a Marvel critic is and a cynic is boring, an old hat now.
Oh, I think it's changing overall. I think there's a general turn in the air at the minute.
Like, you know, the great Ewan Paterson, formerly of this parish, we had a good bit of back and forth. And like, I hate the things you love, because he thought wrestling was stupid. Truth was, we were both right. Like, all of it's terrible. terrible. All of it's garbage, but we just care about it. And like companies, in my case, WWE, in his case, Marvel, will just try and wring out every last, tip us upside down like the school bully taking a dinner money. Is that, are you sure you're not got another quid up there? Like, and I think that about the games too. There must have been some from this era of like the MCU era. What's it? Iron Man 1 was the start and it continues to this day. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but there must have been a game that ruled. There must have been something that was awesome.
This is
Spider-Man. Friggin' Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that's not a tie-in. Like,
Spider-Man games are awesome.
That still took them like 10 years.
This is what makes me worry, right? Because all of the games you were talking about, that was the old model. That was them farting these things out and viewing them as a toy, viewing them as extra merchandise.
Something for the Christmas party.
Exactly that. Something to turn that 100 million into a potential 200 million by spending...
See the movie and you go home with the game.
Yeah, as little as possible. Now, though, it's since Spider-Man came on the scene, like, that was a fully formed thing. Of course, it was, you know, using the Spider-Man brand from the movies and the comics to bolster it, but it was an original
game
story.
Rules, man. That recent one on the PS4.
It was absolutely incredible.
I spin around New York and look at it.
Yep. Yeah. It sold really well, but now the issue is people went, oh, if these things are good and we put time into them, like, they will sell way more than they ever did. So now I worry that when EA signs a deal like this, they're not farting them out in a year and then we're still getting original stuff. They're putting their biggest teams on these projects that take 5 years at a time, and then you only have so much bandwidth. Is then everything you get a Marvel game?
It's a worry because the action movie died.
Right.
So that Marvel could own the summer, didn't it? Like, you get one action movie maybe every, like, I was thinking Mad Max for some reason, and there will be others, but maybe once every 5 years you get an action movie that's...
John Wick's pretty much the only other, like, top tier thing.
Top Gun this year. Yeah. Like, every now and then an action movie is permitted to compete with the big Marvel blockbuster of the season. I guess that's the model, that something exists that could happen to gaming if it happened in... And because it's content as well. Mm-hmm. Everything is content, to the detriment of everything, by the way. Everything is content, so gaming will surely just be part of that problem.
Yes.
Rather than contributing to any kind of solution against it.
It's interesting in terms of like that idea, like, things being greenlit beforehand, and that's why because it's more of a calculated risk and whatever else, because like the likes of Iron Man and those old games, the Captain America movie and everything, they had games tied in with them when they launched. Well, the Iron Man one was like a mobile app or whatever. But this thing of EA saying, like, now we'll do an Iron Man game with a budget, with a Spider-Man sized budget or whatever, that is still a very calculated risk. That is still very, like, bankable, but it's not like they're doing like a more undersung, they're not doing like a Nightcrawler game or something. It is still the most obvious thing they could do.
On this, is there going to be or has there been discussion about Super Mario Brothers, the movie, the game? Are they going to...
There's been discussion about it, but...
Because that would have been how it would have been once upon a time, wouldn't it? You would get the original Mario film, or like the terrible Street Fighter film, like that
I was going
to
say,
but Kylie Blesser was trying to carry.
Yeah.
You know, like, just, I just feel like that, if it starts eating itself, like... Mario is incredible, so you get a really great Mario film. Mm-hmm. Finally, it's the one that people have always really... Sonic. There's a better example. Would you get a game that is the film version of Sonic?
Could
that work?
There's a weird crossover, because like in Street Fighter's case back in the day, there was that Street Fighter, the movie, the game. That was its full name. And it was like the game of the movie, but it was the movie of the game in the first place. But you had all the sprites that were based on the actors, and that barely sold and whatever. There was that thing. And then for Sonic, new Sonic, there's like Sonic add-on stuff in Sonic Colors, the remaster they just did, which I know because I buy everything. And you can get like an animation, you get a costume, makes him look like the movie one, not a full reframing of his entire being, but it like animates him differently, makes
I
him
felt
look like
chemical
that.
Rush there.
Oh,
I
love
that, like, off of the film. Oh, I got something.
Sonic Frontiers is next week and I'm counting the days. Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah, so they try and tie stuff in. The Mario one's interesting because I would take like I would love a Jack Black Bowser voice pack for Mario. I don't know what you'd put him in, though, whether you put him in Mario Odyssey, whether you wait till the next Mario. Like, we are overdue the next Mario anyway.
Or do the levels just replicate whatever happens in the film?
Well, so
you just do it chronologically. I'm thinking I'd take the kids to see the film, and then they want to, and then, oh, this is the bit from the first bit of the film, and now we're on level one, and it's this. Like, that doesn't seem too hard to...
No, in Mario's case, I think what they're doing is rebolstering the entire history of Mario to this point. Like, even those little penguins are from Mario 64, and like the Ice Kingdom and whatever else. Like, there's thing I, because basically I've watched that trailer and then went back and just played Mario. I went back to 64. I played all of Sunshine in a couple of days, and it's like, I think that's what they wanted to do. Because on the Switch's charts, Mario just dominated the top 10 like the week after that trailer came out. So I don't think they do a weird Chris Pratt Mario game. I think that would, I don't know what that would do, but it wouldn't feel like a Nintendo product. And it would be a bit too Western.
Yeah, I think like the kind of modern model is to like Scott was saying, you know, get a costume from the movie in a game that already exists, so that you can go home, buy a microtransaction rather than a full game. So they're still getting a bit of, you know, money for, you know, bare minimum effort, considering in relative to creating a costume compared to creating a full game. And they still get the little boost, they still get the interest in the game itself. Mm-hmm. And then I think they managed to win without risking anything at all.
Or they do the branding deal. I have Microsoft Flight, because Top Gun, like Microsoft Flight Sim and Ace Combat 7 both have Top Gun DLC, where you can just put, you can get Maverick, you can get his plane, whatever the hell it's called, and you can do some stunts and everything else. And I re-downloaded all 100 gig of Microsoft Flight Sim so I could fly over my own house in Maverick's plane. But I almost bought Ace Combat 7. That was how bad the illness got. But that was the pull of, like, I love this movie so much. I just want to play this thing. And it's like, they did a branding deal. That almost got me in again.
I love that you flew over your own house.
Yeah.
Well. That's such a...
I flew over and took loads of photos. I went down the sea.
I just... The one thing on the Switch that is just for me, and it's perfect because I can do it in, like, snackable moments, 5 minutes time here or there, is Tetris 99. Tetris, but it's just fast, it's competitive, it's like so playable, and you get, obviously, you know, the more you play it, you build up experience points or whatever, and you can unlock skins within it. And I got to the point where I could unlock the original Tetris thing, and I'm playing, I'm thinking, this is great. And it's like, you've got hundreds of pounds of technology in your hand to play a version that you played when you were 10 years old.
Hey, that online functionality wasn't there in 1989.
On a primitive, like, Game Boy that you've just basically had a thing. You know this thing like, that I paid a fortune for? Can I make it look like the much older one from my youth, please? As if I'm trying. It reminds me of that story Russell Brand told when he was in the throes of a terrible heroin addiction. He would play GTA. His character would get in bother and he would just sit there, his life in ruins, his character in ruins, and go, oh God, I've screwed your life up too. I'm looking at this thing, they're like, what was this for? Like, what am I holding about? The power of this thing. Can you make it like the old one, please? They were like sort of going on the internet and being, can I just print this out and read like a newspaper, please? What, the entire internet? Yes, please. All of it. That's just how I like to consume things.
Can you print out this email and send it to me? Can I just make sure I'm getting it the right way.
Post.
I feel like overall, can you make it like the old one is the general mentality in gaming right now. But yes, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tailford.
A massive, massive thank you to Michael Hampshire for joining us for that. I think that was a lot of incredible insight, and I love your rant about Marvel. I wish we could separate that into something else.
I would say I would love to come back, but I think after that, I'm not going to be welcome. So it was a joy.
Destroyed the buffer, because sometimes Scott will say Marvel's a bit of nothing now, and I'll go, I still quite enjoy it, and you come in sledgehammer and go, Scott, you're right, you can never talk about this again, we've completed this discussion.
I needed a Sonic fan who didn't like MCU the whole time. But yes, for now, whatever I said, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.